You love my feet? You haven't sat in the front row. Yeah. Go ahead, tell them. Explain. Explain what I'm saying here. Yeah. You can see I'm doing okay having the freedom to wear flip-flops, even with my feet. I had to work through that many years. Well, it really has been just really fun to be together. You know, when you speak to a camp or a group of people, you just ask the Lord to make something significant, you know, and that we're not just going through the motions and wasting our time. And it's been significant for me, and just getting to be with you, and you just seem so responsive, and the number of you sleeping and snoring while I'm speaking has been at a minimum, so I'm thankful for that. But it really has been a great time. I've really appreciated it. Carrie and I have both really enjoyed the week. We're going to hit the final piece of our short little statement that is our outline. If any man wants to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow. And then the last one today is the me. And the emphasis is that, is we know that it's Jesus. It's not follow your heart, follow your dreams, follow what you hope happens in your life. It's follow me. That's Jesus speaking. And before we get into the text that we're going to use today, I can't help but have a little parenthetical thought here about this issue, because it's just a passion of mine, so I'm going to insert it where maybe it doesn't even belong. But when we are to follow Christ, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And I just would like to give a little shout out to, when you follow Christ, it means follow him in truth and not fudging and sneaking around the edges of truth. And, you know, whether we're ready to admit it or not, that is a battle in all of our lives, really holding to truth. So how can we follow the way, the truth, and the life while we're not living in truth? And there's all kinds of ways that we can do that. We can live in ways that we're hiding things. We can live in ways where it's just more about comfort instead of being in truth. And so we're not even having the opportunity to be used in someone's life that needs truth spoken to them. And I would just like to give a little pep talk here that following Christ means living in truth in every way. And I like to use even the silly little examples you want Carrie? Hold on a second. Are you here? She's not here right now. Can I take a message? Those are the little cracks in the slab that, you know, it's so easy and tempting to do because it helps keep your comfortable life. You know, you don't want to have to make someone feel awkward or tell them something, but we end up fudging on the truth, and then it's so hard to determine between that little white lie and a little bit bigger white lie and then a medium lie and then kind of a big nasty lie and then an obliterating lie. How do you determine where that slippery slope is? So here's just my little encouragement to live in the truth. And even when your wife, men, asks you, does this dress make me look fat? What if it does? I would like to challenge us all to find loving, supportive ways to speak the truth. Because we need that. Not only are we supposed to live in the truth, but if you have the ability, like if my wife will ask me something like that and I know I'm in big trouble if I, you know, say it wrong. So I'll say something like, well, to be honest, so many of your other dresses are so much more flattering than that one. And it's like, whew, you know, got through that one. But that's at least living in the truth. Instead of, oh no, you look fine. Because here's what I faced. Not only is it important to follow God because He asks us to live in truth, but just even relationally, when she does ask me, how do I look in this dress? And I get to say, you look fantastic. When she knows that I'll tell her when it doesn't look that fantastic, it means so much more. It really means so much more with your kids, with your spouses, with the people that you live with. So I've gone on long enough, but here's my little parenthesis. Live in the truth in even the little things, but especially in the big things. We can't follow the way, the truth, and the life when we're not living in truth and we're hiding things and carrying those with us. And you'd be amazed how the Lord ministers to you when you decide to break things open into the light and into truth. So that's just a little passion I have to insert there. But that's not going to be the text we're going to look at. You can turn in your Bibles to Matthew 14. And if you didn't bring it today, I don't blame you because I haven't required you to turn to a passage. But today it would be helpful to have. And I'll tell you, while you're turning there, this is the story of the feeding of the 5,000. And without even reading it, I want to give you a quiz. How's that for a tough teacher? You will not read it, but I will give you a quiz. And I am going to bet a lot of something on the fact that you can pass this quiz. Because we all know this story. Okay, are you ready? And I want you to answer out loud. Don't worry about the person next to you. You don't have to shout it. Just say it verbally, what the answer is. Short answers, please. But I want to show us how much we know this story. How many people did Jesus feed with a very small amount of food? Very good. You're doing well. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Yes. Where did that small amount of food come from? Little boy, you guys are 2 for 2. Very good. What was the disciples' solution to it being late and no one having food to eat? You guys are good. Okay. What was the food that was served? Fish and bread. Beautiful. How many fish? Okay. And how much bread? That's good, because you guys could have mixed up the feeding of the 4,000, which is a little different, right? Did you remember that? Okay, good. How many baskets left over? 12. Okay. So, let's close in prayer and be done. You guys know this one. But so you know the story. But there's a couple of things that I want to use in this story to help us, because today the subject is going to be what takes place when we deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow Jesus. What happens? What can we expect? What are the things that we will experience when we do that? And so we're going to use this passage to help us in that. And so I'm going to start in verse 14 and just read a quick little statement. It says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and he healed their sick. Now, that's just a quick statement, but I want you to know that Matthew is a long book, but he is known for being extremely concise in what he tells. His accounts of certain stories are less than the same account in other Gospels, and he gets right to the point and says it quickly. He's thrifty with words. And so this fact that he saw the large crowd and he had compassion on them and healed their sick is a real abbreviated version of what really went on with the other things. There's more to be said about that, but Matthew kind of keeps it short. And we see that it's a repeat of something that occurred back in chapter 9. You don't need to turn there, but I'll read it real quickly. Verses 35 through 36. And it says there back in Matthew, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. See how similar that is, but said in a longer fashion? He had compassion on them, and then it gives us the answer for why he has compassion on them. Because it could be a lot of different reasons. But the main reason he had compassion on them was because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. See the connection to our week this week? Shepherding our kids, shepherding our families, having the good shepherd. Jesus had compassion on the people because they were harassed and wandering around with no leadership. And he felt compassion on them like they were sheep without a shepherd. You know, there's a lot of times that, well, I'm going to hold off on that a second. He's concerned with more than just their empty stomachs. This passage here is a lot about, we hear a lot, and it's true, it's absolutely true, how Jesus supplies our needs. And he does, in miraculous ways. He supplies our needs. But I want to tell you something. To expand our view of this passage, I want us to know something, that he's also doing something else here. When he has compassion that they are sheep without a shepherd, he is about to shout to them in very loud voice, without words, by his actions, that he is their shepherd. He's concerned that they're wandering around, and we go quickly to the fact that the fish and the bread filled their bellies, and yes, that's true, and it's a good life lesson that Jesus is capable of doing that. But I want you to know something, that he is doing this because he feels compassion that they have no shepherd, and he, in the next actions that he is going to take, is going to be shouting, "I am your shepherd." And we're going to be able to look why he says that. It says they are harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Jesus gives them an opportunity to see that he is the good shepherd. And let me explain why. Number one, feeling compassion for them, he's healing their sick. That he's been doing that. He's demonstrating that he has authority over this world. He's demonstrated already that he has authority over nature. He has authority over sin. He's offering forgiveness to people. And now he has forgiveness over disease. He is making a statement that he is something more than just a really nice guy wandering the countryside. This idea that he's breaking the bread in the middle of the wilderness. They went out to a desolate place and they're breaking the bread in the wilderness. This is a loud statement. The people at that time almost certainly would be taken back to the idea, because there are Jewish people in this and they are very well aware of the history of their people. And they hear constantly, if you go read back in Deuteronomy 6, it's telling, teach your kids these things. Tell them as you're sitting down, as you're lying down. And so the Jewish culture is all about telling the stories of how the people were taken through the wilderness and how God delivered them. And they're very, very well aware of the fact that God delivered them by feeding them the bread in the wilderness, the manna, and took care of them. And so when he's sitting there in the wilderness and all of a sudden comes up with bread out of nowhere and is feeding them, it most certainly has to have some overtones of, can you believe this? Doesn't this remind you of what happened with our forefathers, that going through the wilderness and being fed with nothing in the wilderness, bread here in the wilderness? There's so much of a connection there that this is something that would very much be seen. The other thing is if you read through the Jewish historians, like Josephus, they mention that there are traditions that the Messiah is going to come back and redo that feeding of the multitudes in the wilderness in a grand scale. So they're all very well aware of this. It's on their mind. So when Jesus says they're a sheep without a shepherd and he has compassion on them, he is stepping up and basically, in a sense, saying, watch this. You need a shepherd? Let me show you something. And now he is going to feed them in the wilderness. Another thing that makes us think this is not just the fact that he's feeding them, but where the story goes from here. Each account that this is in the Gospels, that this is recorded in the Gospels, each one of these accounts lead to a discussion of Jesus' identity. It goes right to, who do people think that I am? We see the same account recorded in John. It leads to, all of a sudden, he's saying, I am the bread of life. This isn't how your tummies feel. You know, was that a good meal? Anybody looking for dessert? This is not about that meal. This is about showing them that he is their shepherd and what his identity is. So as in Luke, we see it goes directly into I am the bread of life. In the account that's recorded in Mark, it also joins the feeding of the 4,000. And as soon as the feeding of the 4,000 is done, which is a kind of a repeat appearance of that, it goes right into the question of who do people say that I am? You hear that? It's not really concerned with the menu. Who do people say that I am? And then also the account recorded in Luke leads us immediately to who do the multitude say that I am? And then he goes to Peter and he asks him specifically, who do you say that I am? You hear how much Jesus is concerned that they understand who he is? He's not just a belly filler. This is not about knowing about a good fast food restaurant in the wilderness. This is about Jesus making it clear because he has compassion on them that they are wandering like sheep without a shepherd. And he's telling them very loud and clearly, I am your shepherd. So we need to keep that in mind as we go through this story, just as to broaden our perspective. It's not wrong to say that Jesus supplies our needs. But let's just not limit it to that and realize that there's so much more to this. So let's keep this in mind as we now go through. So now as we read the account, we want to be aware of what is the result of following Jesus. And we know, first of all, that he's going to make himself known. He's going to show us who he is. He's going to show us that he's the bread of life. He's going to show us that he's the good shepherd. But we'll get to see that as we move along. Verse 15, as evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food. Now, here's what's interesting about this. Oftentimes, I've heard this story mentioned in light that all the silly disciples, they don't have faith in Jesus. They have a narrow mind and their faith isn't strong enough here. And we get down on them because the disciples are stepping in and functioning in this way. I personally want to kind of do a shout out for the disciples that I think that what they're doing right now, I don't hold that against them. Now, when they miss the boat later on, after he's fed the 5,000, then the 4,000 come again, and they're still like, where are we going to get bread? When they ask at that point, I feel like, come on, you knuckleheads. They just went through that. But on this one, they're not acting out of what could be expected. They're doing some good things, actually. They're thinking of others, probably realistically thinking of their own, you know, hunger and stuff. So they're thinking of the needs of the people. They're thinking of the realities of their own hunger. They're thinking of the surroundings that they're in. They're in a desolate place. There's no fast food. There's no market nearby. They're taking all this into the consideration. They're aware of the time, that it's getting late. In fact, sending the crowds away would even get back to the idea that Jesus would be able to find a solitary place. Because if you look back in verse 13, it says he went out to find a solitary place. So who can blame the disciples for just functioning in kind of this normal thinking? I'd like to even say I appreciate their thinking at this stage. Here's something that goes on. I don't believe the disciples were wrong to function in normalcy. Now, do we have any English majors in here? Is that an okay word to use, normalcy? I know that's a real word, but it just sounds kind of funny, but I couldn't come up with one that's better. But we don't need to look down on the disciples for functioning in the normal way of life. When you get hungry, you got to have food. And in order to get food, you got to go get it. And that's kind of the normal way things function. My problem is that oftentimes, we as Christians, knowing that we serve a God who is bound by nothing, too often miss our responsibility in the normalcy and expect God to step in and either bail us out or do something. And in a sense, we're demanding God to do something that we're actually the ones leading in and then saying, God, come follow my lead. Do you get what I'm saying here? Instead of doing the things that we're called to do, we may stop short of that and then count on God to make up the difference. An example I can give you is back before I was a pastor, I had several different jobs, and oftentimes in those early years, I would, without the tenacity that I needed to have, I would sit there and tell my wife in this smug way, well, just the Lord will take care of us. Don't worry, the Lord will take care of us. And she finally said to me one time, she says, I know the Lord will take care of us, but I need to see you doing your responsibility. The Lord will provide whatever comes, but I think even the Lord wants you to be beating every bush that you need to beat. And I was hiding behind the spiritual side of the Lord will take care of it. And I was just kind of going through life without a paycheck and thinking, you know, this will be fine, honey. Don't worry. You know, if you could be as spiritual as I could, you could relax too. And, you know, sitting there like this. But and it hit me between the eyes. This is one of the many times that I've realized that God has spoken directly through my wife to me. And she said, God will provide. But he asks you to do the things that you're responsible for. And that changed so much in my mind. I realized there was the normal life that I needed to take care of. I needed to be responsible for. And so I think when I see the disciples here, my heart goes out to them that I think they're doing some good things in functioning normally. And then when God, you know, I think it's really okay for us to pray for and to hope for, and to even expect the incredible. The Lord is so capable, and I'm sure each of you have many stories where God has come in, where he has been doing the incredible. But I think while we wait and pray and expect for that, we still continue on functioning in our normalcy. And the reason why I say that is the example of the Thessalonians. The second letter written to the Thessalonians, Paul gets on them, rebukes them. You know why? They left their normalcy and sat out there in a spiritual stupor waiting for the Lord to come. They stopped working. They didn't even go to their jobs anymore. And because they decided that it's coming now, because, you know, they were being taught about the end times and stuff, and they got all really excited, but they decided when it would be and said, oh, good, we don't even have to work anymore. So I'm going to go out here, and I'm going to just sit and wait for God. And Paul got word of it, and he rebuked them. I think we need to be careful about how we throw around the power of God and following Jesus and what that means. Oh, I follow Jesus. I don't have to worry about that. He'll come through for me. Well, are there things that you're not coming through that Jesus is waiting for you to do? There are things in our life that we can do, and that doesn't mean that we're losing faith. That means we're handling the responsibility that he's called us to. And then we can hope and pray and expect for the incredible. You know, we as a church, the church that I am pastor of, we're going through a move. We're getting into a new building. The economy has been rough, and you know, it's tough times financially for our budget. And we're thankful that we haven't had to lay anybody off. It's tough times for churches. Maybe some of the churches you're a part of has experienced tough times as well. It's just flat out tough. Well, you know what? We as elders are praying for the incredible. We're praying that the Lord will provide in ways that we don't even see how he can. We know our congregation. We do not have a money tree. And we're looking at it and saying, it's bleak. But we're praying for the incredible. But you know what? In the normalcy, we had to go through our budget and hack out different things and try to make ends meet and live in the normalcy rather than blindly saying, oh, the Lord will provide. And going through and making decisions and then saying, God, you following? Are you with me? When really the way that we need to live is to function in the way that God has set us up to be responsible for what we can do. And then he will step in at some point and knock our socks off with something. And then we are following his lead, not us stepping out and trying to do something crazy and expecting or demanding God to follow. We see this in the temptation of Satan, where he was trying to tempt Jesus. Remember, he took him up to the high point of the temple and said, "Hey, you, I know who you are. Throw yourself down right now and let God send his angels. Wouldn't that be great? This would be spectacular. Wouldn't that be great if God would do that? Throw yourself down." And Jesus said, "No, I'm going to function in normalcy." And you know what's so great is he backed off and did not tempt the Lord to do that. And then God sent his angels, and instead of protecting him from this big thing of bailing him out, he just ministered to him. Because remember, this was right after the temptation. And the angels then did come in God's plan, in the way that it was supposed to go. And the angels then did come and ministered to him in a wonderful way. That's following God's will, not stepping out and expecting God to follow our blueprint. There's a big difference there, and we as believers need to make sure that we are following and not leading. I am all for the incredible. I am all for the miraculous. But when God says and what he wants to do, and I'm not going to write the script for that, and I'm going to pray for it, and I'm going to ask for things that I think may never happen, but I'm going to ask for it, but I'm going to function in the areas that I can function and let the Lord lead us in that process. So I just would like to go easy on the disciples today. I think they're functioning in their normalcy. Verse 16, Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. Now this is an interesting section. Because in the translation, we lose something. In the original language, I call this the but section. That's one T, by the way. It's the but section. You know, when you're talking to your kids and you give them some instruction, and their first thing is, but, you know, and they have something that is going to give you new information why they shouldn't have to do what you're telling them to do. You know, but. And it's interesting because this little dialogue here is the but section, because Jesus tells themself and they say, but, and then he says, but, and they say, but, and he says, but. And that little day, the D-E there in the Greek is there every time. So it's this little bantering back and forth of trying to get the two worlds in line together, because they're not even thinking the same direction. Jesus has something in mind. The disciples are functioning in normalcy. And what Jesus is asking for is not normal. So all of a sudden it's, but. And we don't blame them for that, but it's this cute little section that goes on. If we read it literally, the disciples said, "Send the crowds away." And Jesus says, "But they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." And then the disciples say, "But we have nothing. Only 5 loaves and 2 fish." But Jesus said, "Bring them here to me." You hear that back and forth? It's almost cute, you know? It's almost cute because it's trying to get this world of normalcy now to function in this incredible world that now Jesus, the Son of God, is now leading them in. And it's quite interesting how this starts to play out. I wouldn't have even blamed them for adding another but here, because even if they get on board, how about saying, "But we're tired, this is a long day, and there's 12 of us, and you want us to feed 5,000 men. Do you know that 5,000 men means probably maybe 12, 13, 14,000 people, because that figure does not count the women and children. So let's just round off the numbers. Let's say 12 disciples to 12,000 people is a conservative estimate. That's one person serving 1,000 people. How many are here at Catalina? 200 people are on that deck. Look at the team that is serving us. One person serving 1,000 people. These disciples are being asked at the end of a long day, "You feed them." And they're saying, "But..." You can't blame them, can you? I mean, there's a lot going on there. Jesus is asking something of the disciples that not only do they have any clue that they're capable of doing, they physically can't do. They cannot do it. We had this discussion in our last discussion group about the idea of when God asks you to do something that, you know, you think you can't do. Well, here it is, right here. They are being asked to do something they cannot do. And here's where it's wonderful, because this is a story of what we will face as believers. Sooner or later, we will be asked to do things that we don't think we're capable of doing. And here we have it right here. So we get to see the interchange that goes on. Verse 19. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. And looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. You got that right on the quiz, didn't you? The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men besides women and children. You see that? Those 12 men were asked to and did serve a lot of people in ways that they never would dream was possible, in ways that it was physically impossible to do. I want to take note of the process that occurred. The disciples were doing everything they could do. They were functioning in normalcy. They were doing everything they could do to be responsible. Jesus asked them to do something they didn't think they were capable of doing. They flat out did not have enough food or money or resources. Jesus asked the disciples to bring what they had. You hear that? We're so quick to say, but. And Jesus is laying it out for what he wants us to accomplish. And we're so quick with the but. But what's wonderful about this story is they didn't say, we don't have enough. Well, we hear there's rumors, but that won't do any good. We don't have anything. He says, bring what you have. What a wonderful concept. He's not asking us to do something beyond us. He's gonna be the one to step into the incredible. He's asking us to do the little bit we can. In a sense, he's asking us to function in the normalcy while he does the incredible. There is no way possible that 2 fish and 5 loaves is going to feed this, but bring what you have. Back to our church and this whole thing, you know, some of you that live in our area, you know we are not an affluent church. And the fact that God has provided us a new building to go to, we are so doggone excited about it. And if I had 2 hours to tell you all the details, you would be amazed at how the Lord provided that building in a way that was impossible. But you know what was really neat? He somehow put it on the leadership's heart that we have a little logo, a little button that was on all of our Journey of Faith material as we were doing the campaign and helping people understand. And in it, it says, bring what you have. Not bring what you don't have. Bring what you have. The Lord, and then I love after bring what you have, then Jesus blessed what they had and multiplied it. Isn't that incredible? That's so simple. But isn't that just mind-blowing? We think that we can't be used. We think that we can't do the things God's asking us to do. We think we can't possibly take that next step. And you know, people might be recommending this and no, but they don't understand. I can't. But you know what? He's just saying, bring what you have. And then Jesus blessed what they had and multiplied it. And then the next thing he did was even just as neat. Once he multiplied it, he gave it back to the disciples, and they passed it out. You know what? Jesus wants to work through us. He could say, thanks for the 2 fish and 5 loaves. Nice help. Go sit down.
Already on. Test 1, 2. Test 1, 2. Test 3, 4, maybe. 3, 4. On? Okay. Very good.
So after he blessed what they had multiplied it, then he gave it back to the disciples and he worked through them. They did the work. They did the service that he was calling them to do. The thing that they didn't think they had any ability to do. But he blessed it and he multiplied it and he gave it back to them. What a wonderful thing. And then to look at this passage and realize that they didn't just get a snack that held them over till they got home. They ate till their bellies were full. And there was even an abundance, 12 baskets full. An abundance. You can see the parallel already that we need to just take from this story. We need to be doing everything we can in normalcy. In other words, in the things that are expected of us. We can't slough off and expect God to then on demand come in and take care of our mess. Now, he is a loving God and capable of doing that, and at times he does, but he's asking us to be responsible. So do what we can to be responsible in this life. Do what his word says. Do what we're humanly capable of doing. But sooner or later, I guarantee you, he's going to ask something of you that you don't think you can do. You're going to come out real quickly with a but. And hopefully he's going to come out just as quick with another butt. And if you have another butt waiting there, he's going to come out with another butt. And because he wants you to do this. And there might be something even right now that in your life you feel like he has been pulling on you. And your honest answer is, but I can't. I can't do that. You're asking me to do something I can't do. You know what? He didn't go for that. He doesn't believe that. He's asking you to bring what you have. Maybe all you have is desire. Doesn't that sound just like a meager amount? Just desire. Maybe you don't think you have skill, you don't have the ability, you don't have the strength. All you have is, well, I'd love to please my Lord, but all I have is desire. Well, you know what? The 2 fish and 5 loaves to encompass 12,000 people. Sounds a little bit like someone just having desire to me. What is that he's asking you to do in your life? Is he asking you to overcome some addiction? Is he asking you to stand for him in the workplace where you just haven't been able to do that yet? And you know, you hear it all the time in the evangelical circles that you need to stand up and be bold. Yes, yes, this time I'm going to do it. And you can't do it. I want you to know something. He's just asking you to bring what you have, and he'll multiply what you have, and he'll use you. He'll give it right back to you, and he'll use you. Women submitting to your husbands, is that too much to ask? Most of the time, yes. It is. It's too hard. But he's asking you to bring what you have. That slight, just that slight little bit of ability or desire to do that. Let him multiply that for you. Men, spiritually leading your homes. What a guilt trip we always have because we know that that's always asked of us. Almost every Christian gathering talks to us men about being a spiritual leader. But you know what? It's hard and it's intimidating. And quite frankly, we actually think the women can do better. But it doesn't matter. God asked us to do it. Just like those disciples, but, bring what you have. He will multiply it. And he'll give it back to you and ask you to do it. I love the fact that he wants to use us. He could do it himself, but what a privilege that he wants to use us. Sometimes it feels like a burden. Sometimes it feels like you're asking too much. But he's doing stuff in the world that is just incredible. And he wants to use us. So our little but does not stop us. That's not a good answer. We must be willing to do that. Well, in conclusion of today and of the whole week, then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Let me say it again, not your heart, but me. Not your dreams, but me. Not your hope or expectation of what he'll do, but me. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. You want to know something? Those that follow Jesus have life to the full. But we've spent some painful moments discovering what following Jesus really is this week. It's not sprinkling. It's denying yourself. It's taking up your cross, and it's following him. He's fed us over and over. He showed us the incredible side over and over again. The question is, who do you say that Jesus is? Is he a cross you hang around your neck? Is he someone you experience when you go to CBS once a year? Is he an event that you attend on Sunday that has worship and teaching? Is that what Jesus is? Who do you say that he is? Is he just an event in your life? Is he a nice break for a short while in your life from all the stuff that's out there in the world? Is he just a nice break? You know what? Jesus Christ made a loud statement here. He's the Messiah. He's our Savior. He's our Shepherd. And it'd be silly for us to ignore that. And he doesn't just ask, he commands his followers to follow him. Let's ask him for that strength to do that the way that we should. Father, we want to follow you, but maybe up until now we didn't even get really what that meant. Maybe some of us got it, but we've been hiding from it. Maybe there's those in here that have got it and have done it. Help us see that and let that encourage us to do that. Lord, we want to follow you. I ask that you'd give us the strength to bring what we have. And then we're so grateful and really shocked that you want to use us. And you will multiply what we have and you will give it back to us and you will use us. What a wonderful thing. Don't let us miss that. Use us in our families. Use us with our kids. Thank you for loving us, and thank you that you want to give us life in the full. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.